Hello, everyone. This is Dave Burda, news editor at Foresight Health. Welcome to Foresight Health's How Healthcare Revolutionaries Think podcast, where we get inside the heads of people trying to fix the healthcare system. Our guest on today's show is Dave Terry. Dave is the co-founder and CEO of a new company called Valendo Health. Valendo Health, which opened its doors in February, helps endocrinologists, the medical specialists who treat diabetes, adapt to value-based care models, and in doing so, helps their practices remain independent. I interviewed Dave as part of our How Healthcare Revolutionaries Think series. I talked to him about how he uses data and analytics to identify high-performing medical specialists and about the right attitude specialists need to make value-based care work for them and their patients. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Dave. Is it Dave or David?
Yeah, Dave is good.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Dave?
I'm good.
That's going to be hard going Dave, Dave, Dave. So,
did you read the Dr. Seuss book, Too Many Daves?
No, you know, Dave, it's funny you say that. Dave Johnson mentioned that to me a while back, but now I have to. Now that there's confirmation from a second source, right?
Yeah, when I had it as a kid, Mrs. McCabe, she had 27 sons. She named them all Dave.
So that's where George Foreman maybe got his idea, huh?
Exactly. Well, you can never have too many Daves. That's
right. Absolutely. More Daves, the better. Well, listen, I appreciate you making time for us this morning. You can't improve it unless you can measure it, I think, is the adage. So tell me a little bit more about that, because you looked at the data. The outcomes were better, you know, outcomes better, costs lower, you know, all those different performance metrics. The role of data there, why is that so important?
Yeah, I mean, so we've all been in healthcare for a long time. I think one of the best trends in the industry is that data is becoming more transparent. Information is becoming more transparent. And it is this, you know, is related to the Affordable Care Act and recent movements by CMS and CMMI to release Medicare claims data, as well as to make pricing information transparent, and efforts where commercial claims data has been made available. And each, you know, alone, each one of these individual data sources is not perfect. But, you know, once this information is available, people like us can take it and start profiling performance. You know, one of the analogies I like to make, I don't really play fantasy sports, or unlike, you know, some of my friends, I'm not on FanDuel or any of these gambling sites or anything like that. But, you know, if
amen to that,
in about 30 seconds, I could, you know, Johnny Damon's one of my favorite Red Sox players. I could get online and I could find out, you know, Johnny Damon's batting average and fielding percentage when he was in Double A 20 years ago. And you know, that creates a lot of transparency, a lot of accountability. I'd love to be, if I was about to have hip surgery, I would love to be able to find out how many times the surgeons in town had done the surgery that I need and what their outcomes look like on a risk adjusted basis for someone like me. I understand, you know, people are different and need different types of doctors. But, you know, as I think about it from a patient perspective, I really want to know who's an expert at the specific thing that I need and what does their historical performance look like. And, I know it's not perfect, but at least that's a starting point. And, you know, that information is increasingly available. Other information that would be tremendous to find to get your hands on is registry data. So the societies keep registries of performance of, you know, their members in different specialties. That data is protected and very hard to get. But, you know, I met with a chief of a surgical department at a highly regarded hospital here in Boston, and he was asking me the same question you just asked about the data and how to use it. And he said, geez, I recently looked into our registry data and we've got some doctors who aren't great, who are doing surgeries, and no one's holding them accountable. You know, they all get paid the same. Very infrequently does anyone get fired or moved out of their specialty. You know, so the transparency and the information that's being made available is, I think, moving us in the right direction. It's still hard to access and manipulate from a consumer's perspective or a purchaser's perspective, but I think we're getting there.
Who controls the registry? I'm not as well versed on that. Is that something internal within a hospital or health system, or is it everybody reporting the same data elements to like a specialty board or a health department?
Yeah, typically it's the specialty society. So like the American College of Cardiology the American Association of Orthopedic Surgeons or groups like that hospitals or physicians, typically hospitals, report that information into the societies. And the societies manipulate the data and report information back to the hospitals. And it is, you know, I understand the reason why, to some degree, why it's protected, because you want to encourage people to report the information candidly.
Right. Kind of that protected peer review aspect.
But you don't see a lot of, you do see research studies and things like that coming out of it. But at least from a public perspective, you don't, it's unclear how that shapes performance of individual specialists within a specialty. And, you know, what we've seen as we've looked into this data is just tremendous variability in outcomes when you look at, you know, the first thing, so if you're a patient wanting to get, if you need a stent, for example, the first criteria is someone who does a lot of it, right? That you know, 300 or 400 a year, that makes them an expert, that like anything else, you know, you just get better and better at it the more you do. You know, so volume is necessary, but not sufficient. Then you want to start to look at complication rates and outcomes, and you know, complication rates can be hard because the sample size is usually really small, but you know, ER utilization after a procedure or a surgery on a risk adjusted basis.
Yeah.
And so from a patient perspective, you want to know, is this person an expert? Do they do a lot of it? Any information we can find on outcomes? This gets a little bit more inside baseball, but I really like to also talk to the specialists about not just what the payers say, or the HEDIS measures say is what is measured, but like, what do you think is most important?
Right.
For measuring or for just deciding whether, you know, this was a successful outcome for the patient, because it's often pretty intricate and sometimes different than what is generally tracked and reported.
Now, how do you see your role? You're not a clinician, but clearly you're working with them. You know, are you kind of the catalyst, the muse? Tell me how you describe your role in all of this.
Yeah, I think catalyst is a good word, or a facilitator. Mm-hmm. You know, my background and expertise is in reimbursement and payment reform, and in you know, trying to match these better models with how folks can get paid. And so with the innovations that are coming out of Medicare and CMMI, there are a variety of ways to, you know, programs to pursue that create more accountability and alignment and reward folks who are really great at what they do. And and then also, you know, I think, unfortunately, you know, CMMI has slowed down a bit in their implementation of these programs and the uptake of these programs. I mean, value-based care really is trying to find ways to build a better approach to deliver high quality care, good outcomes, good patient experience at a lower total cost. And yeah, you know, I want to work with people who share the passion.
Yeah, I think that's true with any venture, right? Baseball team, you want to work with people who are all in, right? So when you use the word preparedness and commitment, preparedness, are we talking about mental preparedness or like a technology infrastructure preparedness, prepared to change? All those things, none of those things?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is the last thing you said, prepared to change, willing and ready to use data and new strategies to try to drive improvement and also to try new things, right? So in your example, you know, rent the car, make the drive, and then, you know, it worked out mostly, but you had to make a shift, and willing to kind of try and then change course as you learn, and just move forward in those directions. Willingness to you know, negotiate different types of contracts and agree to different types of terms with payer partners or, you know, folks like that, and, you know, do more with virtual care, kind of combine, you know, virtual care is a huge opportunity to improve care and convenience for patients, and also create more capacity and improve business model. And so, you know, having a hybrid approach where you can see patients in person and see patients virtually, and some doctors have experience with that and some don't, but willingness to do more of that. You know, then a lot of this is, it's a 180 degree shift from the way you get paid in fee for service once you ultimately get to value-based care. and acknowledging and understanding what that means and how, you know, how you think about workflow, patient care process, you know, who you see today versus, you know, who you see in a value-based contract versus who you would have seen today in fee-for-service, you know, a lot of different things around that and willingness to embrace those changes.
Right, right. The other word was commitment. There, are you talking about being in for the long haul versus I'll give it 6 months kind of a thing? I know commitment also is a lot of the things you just mentioned about being all in, willing to change and all that. And I'm just thinking, you know, in terms of duration, is that a...
Yeah, I think there's different levels of preparedness and commitment too, right? I mean, to start with, we need people who are leaders who are all in on this, right? And are passionate about it and can describe to their colleagues why they're all in and where we're going to have a, you know, have a vision for where we're going. And, you know, I want a partner, and, you know, I've been doing this for 30 years. I'm all in on it. And this is what I want to do. And it's not easy, but you know, just keep going. And I need partners, you know, at the leadership level who share that commitment and we're all in on it. And then, you know, from there, the next tier of folks that we bring in, you know, want to move in this direction, but also just want to do their day job, right? There's plenty of room for people who want to do their day job. And we have to create a model that is satisfying professionally, but also helps them optimize their income such that they, you know, expect based on all the training they did and the debt they took and the opportunities they have.
Right. But you said about value-based care being right around the corner for 30 years or whatever it is. If you were to pick one thing that has kept it around the corner, I mean, you did mention CMMI slowing down. Other than that, what would you put at the top of that list that why it's been around the corner and hasn't moved or moved slightly?
Yeah, you're going to get the cynical side of me, I guess, here a little bit. And that is, you know, the current structure, fee-for-service, works very, very well for lots of big incumbents.
Yeah.
And, you know, the you know, motivation to change is, you know, certainly strong in pockets of our industry and our economy. But there are lots of very big established players who this has been successful for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talk about this in a lot of different ways, but, you know, now healthcare, when I started in healthcare in the early 90s, I think we were about 12.5% of GDP on healthcare, of our GDP being spent on healthcare. Now we're, I think, over 19%, approaching 20%. And I don't think that's all bad, but I think it's eating more of our economy than it should. And the outcomes are more variable than they need to be. And, you know, access is tougher than it should be. And our performance relative to others around the world is not great. But if I look at it from the other side, you know, getting up to 19-20% of the economy for the industry that you know, I'm in, if I'm a big hospital system or something, that's just growth.
Right. You worked for a number of healthcare management consulting companies. I talk to a lot of companies, and the buzzword is trusted. They want to be your trusted partner. You know, they want to be your trusted, and everything's trust, trust, trust. And it almost becomes hollow when they use it. And I'm just curious, you know, based on your perspective, how do you separate the, I don't want to say good guys from the bad guys, but people who are more serious and less serious?
Here's my observation. Like, I was a pretty good consultant. And I you know, the thing, I think what makes me, I think, a better entrepreneur than I was consultant is I'm a good problem solver. And, you know, I can see a problem and I can kind of break it down and figure out, you know, what the steps are to solve the problem and to who we need to partner with to kind of get from, you know, point A to point Z. And this would be even more cynical today, but I think the best consultants,
yeah,
the most successful consultants are problem makers.
Okay.
Where, you know, you can go to a big client and you can say, look, you think you have this problem, but what you really have is this big meta problem.
Right.
And you thought you needed me to solve this problem, but you need me and all my colleagues to solve this big, huge problem. And so, you know, the advice to the purchaser is to, you know, really understand the problem you want to solve before you hire the team of people that are going to solve it. And ideally, those team of people are in your organization, because I'm sure you got lots of smart people in your organization. But if you need help, you know, have clarity on what the problem is and the specifics of what that help you need a third party to help you with.
So you're saying the ones to watch out for, the red flag, is the ones who will immediately say, you have a bigger problem, you need more of us. Or is it just the opposite, that they're giving you a different perspective on the root cause?
Yeah, and I understand these, you know, my clients were big health systems, big academic medical centers and health systems, urban health systems, mostly across the country. And the challenges they have are big, right? It's not easy business, particularly today, post-pandemic, and right. You know, lots of different challenges. But, and it's not to say that there aren't people out there that can help, but I do think that it's the responsibility of management to understand the magnitude of those problems and the type of advice and help they need. You know, just be wary of folks who are, you know, telling you, and if you understand that really well, then you'll find the right advisor for you. But you got to understand, you're going to do the work and understand that first before you let the advisors take charge.
Well, this has been great. I appreciate your time this morning, and good luck with the rest of your day.
Great. You too. Thanks, Dave. Really appreciate it.
If you'd like to learn more about how Dave Terry thinks, please read our Q&A with him on foresighthealth.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.